10 after 1.
Oh. He gavels us in, gavels us out, gavels us in, gavels back.
Oh, you gavel enough times we were supposed to end.
That's right. That's all stand.
I'm glad to release this.
We could. We could start the committee that way.
Well, whenever the Columbia County Assessor shows up, I get nervous, Mr. Chair.
Uh-oh.
That's true. That's always a sign, I believe. The Senate committee is, revenue committee is now open. I think that's always a sign that signy die is imminent.
Yeah.
Is Columbia County.
It's usually a sign that I'll be carrying a bill I don't understand.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2024. Mr. Malik.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2024 is a bill that comes through the county assessors, and it passed the House so far, and it opens the door to allow the Board of Property Tax appeal to cheat a petition that has been agreed upon between the two parties outside that board to treat it as withdrawn rather than keep it in the record and go through it and stipulate it and send by mail and so on, which allows a greater flexibility of resolving some issues. Also, House Bill 2025 will speak to a similar process. And it also comes to us from the county assessors. And in that respect, also, it doesn't have any revenue impacts or fiscal impacts. It's speeding up in the housekeeping sort of a bill that simplifies life for assessors and the Board of Tax Appeals.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, when the assessors call it a housekeeping bill, keep your eyes open. Got to be really careful with these guys.
Got an ornery committee before you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Tom Linhares, a Columbia County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. And like you, Senator Hannon, whenever I hear the gavel knock three times, I think I'm in the Elks Lodge and I should stand up. House Bill 2024 is an attempt by county assessors to speed the process of dealing with appeals that have been filed with the Board of Property Tax Appeals, and the assessor agrees that the value currently on the property roll is too high. Currently, what happens is the assessor and the property owner agree to a lower value. They enter into a signed stipulation agreement. They submit that stipulation agreement to the Board of Property Tax Appeals clerk prior to the time the board convenes. We had been operating under the impression that that was as far as the process needed to go, but in doing some additional legal research and sometimes I wish the Department of Revenue wouldn't ask the Attorney General's office so many questions, but as a result of some of that research, it was determined that even with that signed stipulation, the board still needed to go through all of their normal procedures that they do on appeals. The current statute says only that they don't have to mail out the order. But in researching the statutes, it was felt that in order to adhere to the statutes, the board still had to schedule for a hearing, issue a formal order, and provide that order to the county assessor's office to give the assessor the authority to reduce the value on the roll. So the property owner and the assessor would agree in early January that the value is too high, enter into a signed stipulation to lower the value, but it was taking until late February, middle of March, in order to get the process all completed so that the roll value could be reduced and a refund check issued. This just says that if the assessor and the property owner agree in a written stipulation that for all other purposes is considered a withdrawal of the appeal from the Board of Property Tax Appeals, so they don't have to schedule a hearing. They don't have to issue a formal order, and we can go ahead and reduce the value in early January and get that property owner their refund check.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Corcoran.
So I have a serious question. If I were a property owner about to go through the appeal process and I did my legal research, would it require that I look at every would the withdrawal contain enough information so that the property owner could discern that a stipulation had been agreed to? My concern is that by doing this, that you eliminate the ability of someone who is going to go forward in the future with an appeal to have information that might assist them in seeking their appeal.
Senator Deckert, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think because a stipulation has been entered into in writing between the property owner and the assessor, it's assumed that there wouldn't be any further appeal taken from that action. To answer your question specifically, I don't know if the withdrawal of the petition from the Board of Property Tax Appeal process would provide the property owner anything in writing other than the fact that the appeal had been withdrawn. But there had already been a previous piece of paper signed by both the assessor and the property owner agreeing to the reduction in value.
Well, Mr. Chair, just following up then, my only concern would be that the way the bill's written, you would have it recorded as a withdrawal, as if the petition had been withdrawn. And I wouldn't. I understand trying to get rid of the unnecessary process and public notice and everything, but I would rather see it recorded as a stipulation. So that if a person was trying to research their own argument about a property value case, that they could just ask for records on stipulations as well as appeals that had gone forward and been settled, you know, without a stipulation. Because it would seem to me that that's what you would do if you were appealing a case. You'd start looking at like properties in the area and whether or not those people had successfully been able to appeal. But if it's listed as withdrawn, I would think that the taxpayer that's new to the courthouse wouldn't know to research the withdrawn ones. They would just think they were withdrawn, not stipulated to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I've got this funny look in my eyes, not because I'm disagreeing or don't understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to figure out how, you know, what the solution would be to your concern.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that it would be, instead of having to schedule the formal hearing and everything, that you'd simply record it as a stipulated settlement rather than as a withdrawal. And that way, a person would, that there'd be then, what, three categories? There'd be four categories. The county wins, the landowner wins, the complaint is withdrawn, or there's a stipulated agreement. And then if I wanted to research it, I'd ask for, cases that were germane to my piece of property.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think we could accomplish that. It would take some redoing of the language, but I'm thinking it wouldn't take that big of a change. I mean, I think we could probably do that.
I don't know. I mean, you may not need to. You may have the votes without me, but
Senator Ringo.
I just walked into this discussion, but it seems kind of odd to set up a system where you would have an appeal and then have some ambiguous response to it. I mean, appeal would either be allowed, affirmed or overturned or withdrawn. And I mean, it would be odd to create a whole separate category. That's just an observation.
Well, maybe you could put stipulated withdrawal.
Maybe.
Just add the word stipulated. That would give the property owner the capacity to research that. Otherwise, why would they research withdrawn appeals?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringer.
People could withdraw an appeal for, I guess, a lot of reasons. Maybe they just get tired of beating against bureaucracy, or they run out of money, or they're just, tired of the problem. Or maybe it is known that people withdraw because they've settled. And that's what the gentleman here said, is that as long as people understood that a withdrawn appeal, there was a high likelihood that that meant there was a stipulated settlement, then that's what you want to happen. You want people to know that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, and we are required to give a copy of that signed stipulation to the board so they have it in their record. And I suppose we could have withdrawn by stipulation. I don't even know that we would have to change the language of the statute. I think the Board of the Department of Revenue, who advises and prepares the various forms that the Board of Property Tax Appeals uses, they could design the form where it says withdrawn by stipulation at the very top.
Mr. Chair.
But you don't need that. Senator Corcoran.
Go ahead. What you're
saying. Well, for that solution, you don't need to change the language in the bill, I don't believe. I mean, that's administratively. Senator Corcoran.
But, Mr. Chair, then I would want clear record in the floor speech on this that it's understood that a taxpayer would have the ability to, the county would have the ability to discern or disaggregate withdrawn without any kind of stipulation versus withdrawn with stipulation or otherwise it'd be a pointless box to check. And I'm just thinking of the next person that goes and appeals, should have the ability to look at what the appeals board has looked at over time.
Well, if you want to work out an amendment, Senator Hannah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to follow up with the senator's comments. The courts have ruled that nothing in a committee has apparently bearing in an appeals process, so it would have to be read into the floor discussion that if this was going to be handled administratively. But I think what the senator is asking is what assurances can we build in so we can... There may only be that one case. There may only be no such cases. But the fact still remains that we want to have it there so that if a taxpayer comes in to appeal and runs into a stipulated agreement, that they understand that closes the books at that point. And I think this is what the senator is asking, is that we can talk about it all we want in this committee, but if we don't make it clear so our colleagues understand it, the courts go back to the speech on the floor to look at legislative intent. And I think that's what you're asking, is
that's right.
Clarification.
And I think that might satisfy, Mr. Chair, if we were able to read that into the floor speech that says that this assumes that the county and the Department of Revenue will, in their rulemaking, create a category that can be separated from withdrawals per se so that okay. People who are looking at appeals can look at that category.
Yeah.
That'd work.
Right. Close public hearing on House Bill 2024. Open a work session on House Bill 2024. Senator Corcoran.
I move 2024 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the discussion that we just had.
Okay, Senator Corcoran has moved with the discussion that we just had, House Bill 2024 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Senator Corcoran. We'll carry that bill, and we will not put that on the consent agenda. House Bill 2025, public hearing. Mazin.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you liked 2024, you was going to love 2025, too. Basically, unrelated bills. It also comes from the county assessors. And this bill allows the county assessor and the property owner to reach an agreement on the adjusted property value, even when the petition has been submitted to the board. And allows them to be into that mechanism of discussion and adjustment as long as it happens prior to the time where the board meets. And this also is seen as a simplification process bill that brings the process and the adjustments between the assessor and the owner and the taxpayer into a faster understanding. Also, in that sense, the treaty does not have an impact on revenue for the either the state or the counties, and no fiscal.
Thank you, Tom.
This is, as Mazin said, this is similar to House Bill 2024. This is a little earlier in the process, however. Quick chronology, tax bills go out prior to October 25th. First payment is due November 15th, and appeals to the Board of Private Tax Appeals are due December 31st. So a lot of times what happens, so 2024 was dealing with what happens once an appeal is filed with the Board of Private Tax Appeals. This is earlier in the process. Property owner gets their tax bill in mid-October, comes into the county assessor's office. The assessor looks at it and says, yeah, you're right, we screwed up. This value is too high. We're going to lower it. And the property owner says, great, I love that. When am I going to get my refund? And the assessor under the current statute says, well, we can't reduce the value until after December 31st to see whether or not you filed an appeal with the Board of Private Tax Appeals or not. And the owner says, I agree with the value you're going to lower it to. I'm not going to appeal. And I have to tell them, sorry, the current language of the statute says I have to wait to lower the value until after I'm sure that you haven't filed an appeal. What this change says is that the assessor can go ahead and immediately lower that value without having to wait for to see whether or not an appeal has been filed. So we can go ahead and lower the value in October, early November, even before that November 15th deadline, or if they come in, you know, November 15th, the day they're going to pay their taxes, and we agree that the value is too high and can lower it, we can get them a refund check in a couple of weeks rather than having to wait until January to see whether or not they filed an appeal. So we're just taking out that language that says, you know, we can lower the value unless an appeal is filed. We're just taking out that unless an appeal has been filed language so that we have the authority to go ahead and process that change right away.
Thank you. Committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hannis.
Could I ask a question? Why was this statute created in that we're now trying to change to give flexibility to assessors if the flexibility was removed from assessors making that determination rather than the Board of Appeals?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, there, I could probably give you a two-hour dissertation on the history. Essentially, it's been an evolving process. It used to be that the assessor couldn't make, I mean, I'm talking long, you know, pre-Measure 5, pre-1990, the assessor really had no authority to change a value after, it was like early March.
Well, that was my question I was going to get to, is that isn't there a prohibition, or didn't it used to be that the assessor, once the rate was established, the assessment rate, couldn't go back and change that? It had to be up to the appeals board to change that. Now you're allowing with this bill the integration of the assessor to come in and say, well, you're right, let's change it here without having the appeals process really function properly. Are we not, or are we trying to simplify something that doesn't need to be simplified?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I think you're correct in your thinking. I think the reason that we're getting more flexible and the reason the assessor now has more authority, and we're asking for even more authority under this bill to lower values, and we're only talking about lowering values. We still have a fairly formal process to increase values. But under Measure 50's tax rate system, it's less significant if value is lowered because it doesn't affect rates. Rates are pretty much fixed as opposed to being calculated new each year. And so whether you lower values before you calculate taxes or whether you lower values after taxes are calculated, it won't affect that tax rate.
Let me ask you, Mr. Chairman, if I can. Let me ask you this. Would it apply to a utility that was a large property owner within a district? Would this section of the provision apply to a large utility holder?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I'm not sure I can answer that because the utility property is the utility role is done by the Department of Revenue. So I don't think
I recognize that, but if they wanted to appeal, could not the utility appeal to the county assessor that the rate was wrong?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I don't believe they could because we didn't establish those values. The Department of Revenue did.
So this would only apply to personal property.
This would only apply to locally assessed property, which is basically personal property, land, and land and buildings. I mean, everything other than public utility property, which is done by the Department of Revenue.
Okay. Let me ask you another question then. Rephrase it from a utility. Let's say I'm a bowling alley. And I disagree with your assessment rate that you've put on my personal property. Now, my real property on my building and land is okay, but my personal property on the equipment, I disagree. Would this be allowed to be flexible for a county assessor to say, yeah, we made a mistake on assessing your personal property here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, absolutely. So that if the bowling alley owner came in and showed us where our value was too high and we agreed, we could, under House Bill 2025, immediately lower the value that was on the roll and either reduce the taxes due or issue a refund if the taxes had already been paid.
Whereas the existing one, the only person that could do that would be the appeals board.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, currently we have the authority to reduce the value on that personal property, but only if no appeal has been filed with the board.
Oh, I see.
So we
okay.
simply have to wait from October, November until January
okay.
to do the work that we could have done 2 months earlier.
Okay, I get you now.
And that's in statute, that 2 or 3 month wait. And that's what this omits.
Mr. Chair, yes, because what happens is we had a stack of accounts this tall waiting to be processed that we couldn't process until after we knew which ones of those had filed an appeal to the Board of Property Tax Appeals, which we don't know until second week of January.
Uh-huh.
And most of those we had determined that the value was too high way back in November. And so they just sat on somebody's desk from November until the middle of January.
Uh-huh. And so you just wait. Now, is there ever a case in that stack where you've gone back and you've seen that there's value in that 2 or 3 month wait? So in your historical stack that sits there for 3 months, can you think of an example where you look back and you pick one out and said, well, there was some value in terms of us waiting 2 or 3 months on this one?
Mr. Chair, when you say value, I immediately talk about property value. I think you're talking about if there's any merit in waiting.
To that particular case.
I can't think of any because the property owners come in or we've identified a problem on our own. And again, the value is based on the prior January 1st. So I suppose, theoretically it's possible that, if we agree to one value in November and then in December, the property sells for more than what we had agreed to lower it to. I suppose we might, but then we've already sort of told the property owner we were going to reduce.
So you're stuck there. I mean, you're in that position no matter what, even if it sold for 20% more than the value was.
Essentially, yes, because still the value is based on the prior January 1st, and the recent sale would apply to the upcoming January 1st and next year's value.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2025, open work session on House Bill 2025.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hannan.
I would move that we send House Bill 2025 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Hannan has moved House Bill 2025 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Corcoran has carried that bill. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2026.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2026 also passed the House and came to the Revenue Committee from the County Assessors. And this bill is primarily tries to simplify the process for which some exemptions go through, especially with the water associations. Basically says if nothing changes on that exemption from ownership of the property or the amount of the property, the watership, excuse me, watership, the Water Association does not have to continue putting their application in year after year and just allows the process to roll over for the next year. And in that sense, it really doesn't have any new or old money taken away, so no revenue impact. It just allows for those associations to have less work and paperwork imposed on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2026, most exemption applications for religious, charitable, fraternal, once the application is filed the first time, there isn't an annual application process unless the use of the property changes or the ownership of the property changes. With this exemption, which is for small, not-for-profit water associations, usually what these are is they're outside of a city or outside of a municipal water association where the property owners on a given street out in a rural area have gotten together and drilled a common well or tapped a spring to serve residential properties, and they commonly own the pump and the pipes and the the well, other the other real property things that service that water association. They have to file an application every year, and these are mostly small. The homeowners do it themselves, and so every year we've got to send them out an application. Every year they've got to fill it out and send it back in. We always have some where they don't file it on time, so we've got to write them a second letter or call them. What this bill says is if nothing has changed, they haven't added any new property, the association ownership hasn't changed, that once they file that first application, they don't have to file every single year. It saves us paperwork, and it saves the property owner's paperwork.
So is there anything currently that ensures that the usage stays the same in that example? Do we do anything currently to take a look at, or is it in the application that however the water was being used, that it's currently being continues to be used for the same purposes?
Mr. Chair, I suppose the answer to that would be, currently they have to file a new application every year. And I suppose if there was any change in usage, that would be reflected in that annual application. Although I'm not sure most of them are filling them out real completely. Because most of these are small, they're rural, they're outside incorporated areas, and there's a limit on how much. It's primarily residential. You can serve some small amount of commercial water use, but essentially it's just a group of houses that have all gotten together to build their own water system.
Yeah. Good answers. Any questions, comments? Close the hearing on House Bill 2026. Open a work session on House Bill 2026.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2026 to the floor of the Do-Pass Recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2026 to the floor with a due pass. Any comments, questions? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Corcoran will carry that assessor's bill. Are you done, Tom? 2027
is here. He's going to be done about to carry one more bill.
2027 is actually
going to be dead me.
So Tom and Tony, Senator Corcoran, maybe have lunch. I'm trying to get you a lunch out of this, Senator Corcoran.
You know, the last time, Mr. Chair, I went to any kind of meal with from a public entity, it was the city of Eugene, and he took me out for cheese pizza. So I don't hold a lot of hope to have lunch with any assessor. I'd probably have to pick up the tip.
Actually, they overspend, I guess.
Oh, do they? And then you get to appeal?
We just waived all the appeal fees. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2027.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2027 is actually a bill that we thought at the beginning was meant to be an assessor bill, but actually it is a collector's bill. It comes to us from the county collectors. And in very simple terms, it tries to adjust some ability for people who are entitled to receive property tax refunds to the ones who are eligible to file for this refund. It basically puts two sides of the law or the statutes into alignment with each other. There is no true revenue impact or no revenue impact at all or no fiscal impact for this bill. It just tries to align those two pieces of the OR assets. And,
thank you very much. Mr. Bartholomew, welcome. Dexter, are you going to get involved in this bill at all?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm here for the next bill.
The next bill, okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Jack Deckert, members of the committee. I'm Gary Bartholomew. I'm employed at Multnomah County and representing the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. House Bill 2027 is a request to amend ORS 311-806, which is the statute that specifies the circumstances for counties to issue property tax refunds and to whom. The change requested seeks conformity between 311-806 and 309-100. 309-100 specifies who has standing to appeal the value of property to the Board of Property Tax Appeals. In 1999, 309-100 was amended to include persons who have an interest in property that obligates them to pay taxes. Most common examples would be lessors, or lessees, I'm sorry, and contract purchasers. The Attorney General recommended that we seek conformity and harmonization of these two statutes. They commented that an individual that has the authority to seek a remedy, in this case the filing of appeal, must then be entitled to the remedy, which in this case is a refund upon a successful appeal. That concludes my comments. Be happy to answer any questions.
Harmonization. What a nice word.
Questions for Mr. Bartholomew? Well done. You've left us speechless. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2027. Open a work session on House Bill 2027.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2027 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2027 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments or discussion? Or
I think, Senator. Mr. Chair, Senator Starr wants to carry this very badly.
We're trying to keep them as a package of bills.
I think Senator Corcoran is on a roll.
What is, Paul, do we know the record for someone carrying the number of bills in consecutive order?
Outside of a mental health facility, Paul?
We're working on it.
Yeah, we'd like to know the record on that. Where are we at? We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Corcoran, we're going for a record here. We'll carry that bill.
You know, I show up to the meeting, you know, late. Do the people that come to the meetings like get to carry bills? No.
That's
I see the message here. Late. Dexter, be careful. You have to carry one for his interview.
Mazin, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Flawless.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could put him on your baseball team when it comes.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Hannon, would you like to jump in on that? Or?
Baseball. On the baseball team? Well, yes, I would. They banned Pete Rose from baseball for gambling. And now we're going to build a baseball stadium with gambling proceeds. I'm really amazed. Major League has had a conversion. Pete Rose is going to the Hall of Fame after all. Hallelujah.
Anything else you'd like to say?
What? Strong letter to follow.
A remonstrance to follow. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2424. Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, each interim legislative council goes through the tax statutes and tries to revise them in a way that changes the syntax, gets rid of obsolete statutes, reorders a number of things. And this is their work for this last interim, is in House Bill 2424. There are no substantive policy changes in the bill, despite its size. Most of the changes that you see there are due to a reordering. The others are due to changes in syntax and deletion of obsolete references.
This is
thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hannon.
Would Mr. Warner be so kind? I'm kind of a country boy. What does syntax mean in grammar and syntax?
Send them to Nevada.
In this combination.
Okay.
It's a big issue in Nevada right now.
Well, syntax means the structure of the sentences. What comes first and what comes last in order.
Well, which came first? You or
Iris? Just don't even get into English, okay?
Okay.
Right. Do we have a sign-up sheet on this?
We have Dexter.
Dexter, you are the salesperson.
The only man in the state
that has
this bill.
Dexter's priority building.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Actually, I would like to credit most of the work in this bill was done by the Legislative Council copy editing staff, and they did, as always, a very good job. As Paul summarized for you, this bill mainly makes technical corrections, errors in grammar, references, mathematical errors, that sort of thing. You will note on at the end of each section is a little one-sentence explanation for precisely what's going on with each of the changes you see in the bill. Other than that, I don't really have anything else to add. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Dexter, could you just walk us through a section-by-section just synopsis of what this bill contemplates doing?
I'd be happy to do that by reading each of the notes at the end of the of the section. Let me start with Section 1.
Well, I'm afraid we might lose our... we might not have a quorum to actually move the bill if we start in...
That's right.
Committee...
Which came first, me leaving or the bill?
I have a question.
Senator Corcoran?
In light of the fact that we were just told today that Senate filings of bills are down 16% from last session and House bills are down 23% from last session, I want to know what you're doing with your free time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, when I discover that I have free time, I will let you know.
Okay.
I would encourage, actually, the committee to take advantage of the coffee that is available today, being that this is the last day.
Can we chip in?
Yeah. Pass the money down to your left.
Okay. Are you guaranteed coffee, Noah?
No, I think this is it.
Pass it down to Snorri. He doesn't drink coffee.
Snorri's got his lips in. Close the hearing on House Bill 2424. Open a work session on House Bill 2424.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Senator Starr has requested that I ask you to move this bill to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, only if he can carry it.
Senator Starr has asked Senator Corcoran to move House Bill 2024 under the stipulation that he actually gets to carry the bill to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection?
Not object.
Well, you can't.
Representation without
strength. Strength are up.
Legislation without up.
And we will have Senator Courtney carry the syntax bill.
Courtney, good. That's a good idea.
He carried it last time. That's so we'll have the Senate our Senate president carry it.
Get ye who knows least. So, Mr. Chair, I have a question. Since we're out of...
We're out of bills. Senator...
We're out of bills. Revision 14 of the calendar for this week, revision 14, which makes me wonder about who's actually, you know, in control here, says that there's an agenda to be announced. Have you forgotten the 24-hour rule? Or are we on vacation, or is there a 15?
15 is on its way.
It's too late?
We got it just under the moon.
Oh.
Three bills tomorrow.
Okay.
The tax be more fun, is that?
You're kidding me.
For a hearing, so you'll want to be there for that one, Senator Corcoran.
Oh, God.
What bills
are you grouping them together, just doing all moronic bills at once?
I'm going to let that lie there.
We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Yeah.